the assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get started, I did drop my new music video this week called Victim Culture. It's directed by Nahar Media, and the beat's produced by my homie, Lex Aziz. And you can find the track on my latest album, Prophet's Path to Nowhere, which is available on all digital retailers. But you can also check out the brand new music video that just dropped on Tuesday on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/KatieTrop or on my website, katietrop.net. All right, so let's get started with a whole bunch of, we got a lot to touch on this week. I mean, with every sport too, pretty much. So let's get started with baseball and what happened throughout this week. A whole bunch of shit happened this week. Starting off on Monday night, I was watching the Yankees versus A's game. And it was very interesting because the one of the announcers, because, you know, during usually before there's a series or before a game, usually the announcers will have little interviews with some of the players from each team. And the announcer did not name the player that said this. But basically, one of the A's, Oakland A's players, he was asked if there who is their standout player on the team. And his answer was nobody. So yeah, that's not really shocking because the A's are one of the worst teams in the league this year. They did unload just about every halfway decent or good player they had this offseason through trade, or just didn't re-sign them. And so they're obviously just, not interested in being a competitive team, at least for this season. So it was very shocking that even the own players on the team for the A's believe that their team doesn't really give a shit this year and there isn't a standout player on the team. With that being said, though, also this week, it's looking more and more likely that the A's are going to be moving to Las Vegas. This week, MLB said they will not punish the A's if they end up moving to Vegas. And usually what happens if you are a team that ends up wanting to relocate, lots of times the league will charge you a fine. And it's usually a big fine, like in the hundreds of millions of dollars. But MLB really wants a team in Vegas, as they should. I mean, NHL is in Vegas, NFL is in Vegas, now they're talking about NBA possibly wanting to be in Vegas, and now you've got MLB. MLB's been looking into it. The A's have been looking into it definitely for the last, I want to say, 2 years for sure. They even have deals where the possibility of land that they're going to be buying. But it's looking more and more like the A's are going to be headed to Vegas with, I have no idea what team they're going to be heading to Vegas with because it's an awful ass team. But it's looking more and more likely. I mean, obviously, the baseball is going to get a team in Vegas as well as the NBA. I imagine both of those leagues will be entering the Vegas realm at some point because, hey, man, Vegas is a huge city. It's a great tourist city. And so that's really what you're going to attract. You may not get home base Vegas fans, but you're definitely going to get all the away fans because I'll tell you what, if I go to Vegas and it's during football season, I don't really care who the Raiders are playing. I want to go, especially if it's my team, but I just want to go because it's football, yo. You definitely can understand why baseball wants to get down there, why the NBA wants to get down there. And so it's looking more and more likely that the Oakland A's are soon to be the Las Vegas A's. All right. And then also on Monday night, Chad Kuhl of the Colorado Rockies, he pitched a complete shutout game against the Dodgers. And then also an impressive pitching performance that same night was Kevin Gausman with the Toronto Blue Jays. He pitched 7 scoreless innings versus the Boston Red Sox. Then the following night on Tuesday, the Colorado Rockies rocked Clayton Kershaw's world. The Rockies have actually been playing the Dodgers very well this season. The Dodgers are not as dominant as they once have been. Now, they've been definitely battling through some injuries, but man, the Rockies took 2 of 3 from them this week, and they just absolutely, not only did Chad Kuhl dominate the Dodgers, but that same night on Monday night, Tyler Anderson, who's basically been the top pitcher for the Dodgers this year, he got rocked by the Rockies. And then the following night, Kershaw gets rocked. So the Rockies, they played great against the Dodgers this week. Then also playing great this week are the Houston Astros. Valdez, he threw 8 scoreless innings pitched versus the Mets on Tuesday night. Then Justin Verlander the following day against the Mets. In a sweep of the Mets, he is the first pitcher to hit 10 wins this season, so he continues to dominate. Then also on Wednesday night, Shohei Ohtani, he had another impressive pitching performance as well with 11 strikeouts. And then another impressive pitching performance with Sandy Alcantara with the Florida Marlins. He pitched a complete game against the St. Louis Cardinals. And it was really funny, too, because the manager came out, looked like he wanted to take him out towards the end of the ninth inning. And Alcantara was like, no, motherfucker. I want to stay in. I want to complete this game. I'm going to win this shit. And he certainly did. Then that same night, Reynolds with the Pittsburgh Pirates, he hit 3 home runs in one night. Then the following night, last night, the Pirates once again, this time Michael Perez hit 3 home runs in one game. So that's the first time in Pirates history that 2 consecutive nights they have had one player hit for 3 home runs. Then also on Wednesday night, Naylor, man. The Cleveland Guardians played an amazing game against the Twins. It was just back and forth, and then it got tied up going into the ninth. And then in the 10th inning, it looked like the Twins were just going to run away with it. They ended up scoring 3 runs, but then Cleveland comes in, and they end up scoring 3 runs. They end up tying the game, and then Naylor comes in, and he just hits this amazing walk-off home run. And that was just a great game just by Cleveland. And then also this week, man, the Yankees, they've been playing great as well. They've been super impressive, especially in the month of June. They've actually hit a record of 57 home runs for the month of June. I can't recall whose record they broke. It might have been the Astros from a couple years ago, but they broke the record, and now the Yankees own that record. And currently, the Yankees they lead the league in all of these categories right now. They have 383 team runs, 126 home runs, and then they have a 3.5 runs allowed. So the Yankees continue to dominate. The Astros continue to dominate. And it's just been a crazy week in baseball. I mean, there's even more than I just said there, but I really couldn't keep up with everything that's been going on this week in baseball. And also, speaking of baseball, happy Bobby Bonilla Day. If you don't know what Bobby Bonilla Day is, every July 1st, Bobby Bonilla, who has not played with Major League Baseball since the year 2001, he had a stellar 16-year career. He was a spectacular player, most notably for the New York Mets. And every July 1st until the year 2035, Bobby Bonilla, he gets $1.2 million every July 1st from the Mets. And if you don't know, basically what happened was in the year 2000, which was his last year with the Mets, he had a $5.9 million contract. And at the time, this was during, the Bernie Madoff deal where he stole a bunch of money from a bunch of rich people. Well, guess what? The owner of the Mets happened to be one of those people. And so they were trying to do anything to kind of save money. And so what they ended up doing was taking that Bobby Bonilla's contract in 2000 for $5.9 million and deferring that into payments with 8% interest. And so starting in the year 2001, since 2011, all the way to the year 2035, Bobby Bonilla gets $1.2 million every single July 1st. And a lot of people used to, it would be kind of like a joke, a running joke about how horrible the Mets are and what an horrible organization they are. But for me, ever since I've heard this story, I'm like, that is one of the greatest moves for a player in any sport ever. This dude gets $1.2 million basically for the rest of his life. Like, that is what a deal, dude. That is such a smart move. I'm sure at the time he didn't really know what was going to happen with it, but this turned out to be, because, I mean, every year he gets $1.2 million. He don't have to do shit. He doesn't have to think about shit. Every year he knows every July 1st, I'm getting $1.2 million. So congratulations, Bobby Bonilla. That is just one of the, and especially because, you know, usually players get fucked over during with their contracts. But this goes to show you why you want to be a baseball player. If you're an athlete at any level and you're one of those multi-sport players, and if baseball's your thing, you got to take up, you got to go with baseball. If you want to get paid, you got to go with baseball. And this is just yet another reason why you got to go with baseball, because Bobby Bonilla is going to be getting paid $1.2 million for the rest of his life. So happy Bobby Bonilla Day, everybody. And then we also have a big fight this week with UFC 276. The main event is Israel Adesanya versus Jared Cannonier. Now, Adesanya, he is a hell of a fighter. He's 22-1 record. Cannonier is 15-5. Basically, Cannonier, he's just a knockout artist. He is a good fighter, but he can knock a motherfucker out. He's got a hard punch, that's for damn sure. But Adesanya, he is a kickboxing fiend. This motherfucker, if you even saw his highlights before he was with UFC when he was a kickboxer, oh my God. This dude, he's a killer. He's a killer. And he has a very, like, weird fighting style because it's very slow. He kind of reminds me of, like, Luka Doncic in the NBA. He has a slow game, but he's very good. That's what reminds me of Adesanya, because he is slow. When you're watching him, you're like, is he going to hit the, what, how's he just, like, pummeling the fuck out of these dudes? Because, like, it looks like you'd be able to see the kick or the punch coming, but, like, he just has such a strong hit that he's just going to knock you out. And he's also great with the kickboxing as well. He's had a couple of knockouts with kicking, and he's just an excellent fighter. I think he's going to end up getting the win. Cannonier, like I said, he's got a great solid punch, and he can knock a motherfucker out, and he could definitely knock Adesanya out. But I think Adesanya is going to get the win. And also, he's a little bit pissed off because there's been some steroid accusations during this lead up to this fight from Cannonier with Adesanya. And it's kind of funny because I wasn't really familiar with Cannonier's game, so I was watching some highlights of his. And it's kind of funny because, like, he went from this pretty out of shape guy, and you could tell when he first started in the UFC, like, he just was starting because he was kind of flabby, but now he is built like a champ. So talking about steroids, he might not want to be accusing people of doing steroids, because if you look at his body, and I'm not accusing him of doing steroids, but I'm just saying the improvement in his body over the last couple of years has been something else. But I got Adesanya in this one, but either way, I expect this to be a good fight. All right, now let's move on to the NBA. There has been a whole lot of movement this week because free agency just started yesterday. But we had a whole bunch of contract extensions. We had a buyout, some declined options, and then, of course, we've got some drama. So let's start just with all the contract talk. Earlier in the week, Houston bought out John Wall of the rest of his contract, so he's going to end up being a free agent. Then Russell Westbrook exercised his player option with the Los Angeles Lakers. Then Bradley Beal, he declined his option with the Washington Wizards, but then he ended up signing a Supermax 5-year, $251 million deal the following day. James Harden declined his player option. And then Nikola Jokic, he got a Supermax deal of 5 years, $264 million with the Denver Nuggets. Devin Booker got a Supermax deal, 4-year, $214 million deal with the Phoenix Suns. And then Ja Morant signed an extension of $193 million with the Grizzlies. So we had all of that. Then we had a trade. The San Antonio Spurs ended up trading their all-star point guard, DeJounte Murray, to the Atlanta Hawks for 3 draft picks. And I got to say, congratulations to the Hawks. That's a good move for them. because Murray is he's a good player. But you got to question what the hell's going on with the Spurs. I mean, they used to be one of the perennial teams in the league. And then Tim Duncan retires, and all of a sudden we had, you know, the drama with Kawhi Leonard a couple years ago, and they end up trading him. Then it looked like Murray here was going to be the future, and they end up trading him away. So what the hell is going on with the San Antonio Spurs? And, you know, as a Laker fan, most Laker fans hate the Spurs. I've actually always respected the Spurs, probably because I've always been a huge Tim Duncan fan. He's my second favorite player right behind Kobe. I enjoyed both of their careers immensely. I just love what they were about basketball-wise. So I've actually always respected the San Antonio Spurs. I've even been to a few Spurs games, not when they're playing the Lakers. I've seen them play the Lakers a couple times. But Spurs games, it's a great stadium to go to. It's positioned perfectly. It's one of the easiest parking lots, in my opinion, to ever get out of. So I like going to Spurs games, respect the hell out of them, but I question what the hell they've been doing over the last years. And I mean, they haven't even been a halfway decent team either. They've just been a bottom of the barrel team that can't even make the playoffs, which is very pathetic because they have a solid fan base. And like I said, they used to be one of the top teams in the league during the Tim Duncan era. And now they are just one of the worst teams in the league. And trading away Murray just makes them even worse. And, you know, yeah, you get 3 first-round picks, but whoop-de-fucking-shit if those turn out to be trash-ass picks. You don't know what the hell is going to happen here. So I just question what's going on in San Antonio because they ain't looking good at all. All right, now let's get to the drama. So earlier in the week, we did not know what the hell was going to go on with Kyrie Irving. Is he going to exercise his player option? Is he not? Is he going to go sign with the Lakers on this small-ass deal? Well, it turned out he exercised his player option. And even the Nets were shocked by this because he didn't have any communication with them. He just decided to do it. So there's that first piece of this puzzle. The following day, Kevin Durant requests a trade. And all I have to say about this is, hi, KD. Would you like to join the Lakers? Because I would love to see Kevin Durant in a Lakers uniform. Now, I don't know obviously none of us know what's going on with this trade request, who the suitors are, but that was my first thought. We could trade Anthony Davis or Russell Westbrook or fucking both of them for Kevin Durant. Now, obviously, I keep hearing about the Lakers are basically the only team interested in Kyrie Irving, which I'm like, why the hell do we want Kyrie Irving if Kevin Durant's out there? I mean, I wasn't keen on the Kyrie Irving shit anyways, but especially now that Kevin Durant's out there, we got to go get Kevin Durant. So please come to LA. That's one player I would like to see in LA, but it sounds like, it's up in the air. You don't know what's going to happen at this point. I mean, the rumors are maybe the Heat are a top destination. There's a whole bunch of destinations, and I mean, there's a whole bunch of teams that could actually work trades out for him. So we'll see what happens there. I would love to see KD in a Lakers uniform. I've actually been a huge Kevin Durant fan. He played for the Longhorns, for 1 year. And, so I always root for my Longhorns. I thought he was going to be a great player before he hit the league. He's been a great player for his entire career, even though this Brooklyn experiment hasn't really worked out, you can't really just put the blame on him. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets have been a poorly run organization for quite some time. But so we'll see what happens with Kevin Durant. That's the big drama. And I assume that means Kyrie Irving's probably going to get traded as well because I don't really see why Brooklyn would want to hang on to him. And also, he's probably going to be creating some drama anyways now because Kevin Durant's not, he's at least requesting a trade. We'll see if it happens. But that's definitely going to be the drama with the NBA over the next couple of months. And I mean, it's been a crazy week. There's even been more signings than what I mentioned there. But I mean, it's just been so tough to keep up with. So I could only talk about so many of them. And then also in big news this week, USC and UCLA have announced that they're going to be moving from the Pac-12 to the Big Ten. This won't take effect until 2024, but I think this is a good move for both teams because the Pac-12 is kind of weak. It never gets its respect. When USC was the most dominant team years ago, they were dominating the Pac-12, and of course it made the Pac-12 a lot more viable. But if they're not the most dominating team, and I mean like absolutely blowing people out of the water, the Pac-12 really doesn't get a lot of love. And it really hasn't got a lot of love. So then moving to the Big Ten, I think it actually works because, you know, you've got Ohio State out there. You got Penn State out there. You got Michigan, Michigan State. So I think it's a big deal for both teams just because both are perennial college teams. And, you know, they are trying what they can to get more opportunities at winning national championships. And that kind of helps you by moving divisions and making things a little bit more competitive and more noticeable. So we'll see what happens there. Of course, everybody's freaking out about it because that's usually what happens in college sports. Everybody always freaks out about nothing. And you're just like, okay, I'm sorry, but I know all you colleges are really upset that you no longer get to completely rape all of the college athletes. But I'm sorry. Shit happens and changes happen, and it's not going to ruin college sports as we know it, because that's what always happens. Every time some team decides to move divisions, or now the NIL thing, everybody starts freaking out in college sports, and you're just like, y'all need to get over yourselves. You sound like a bunch of babies because you're all upset that for once things aren't going your way. Okay. All right. So today's Trop 10 list, it is a Trop 10, not a Trop 5 this week, just because there were a lot of guys on this list. And so I had mentioned the other day when I was talking about Ken Griffey Jr., how I think he is one of the greatest players in baseball to never win a championship. And so I decided, let's do Trop 10 baseball players who have never won a championship. And there were a lot. This was a really difficult list to rank because it's crazy how many guys are available. So let's go ahead and start with number 10. The main reason why I put him on this list is most notably for his amazing name. And his name is Gaylord Perry. And yeah, I am a child and think the name Gaylord is absolutely fucking hilarious. And that is why he at least made my list. When I saw him, because, you know, I was looking around at players who haven't won championships but were solid players. He is a good player. But when I saw him on the list, I was like, well, he's making the list just because his name is Gaylord. So what did Gaylord do with his amazing career here now? So Gaylord, he had a long career. He played for 22 seasons from 1962 to 1983, but he played for quite a few teams. He started off with the San Francisco Giants from 1962 to 1971 and played with the Cleveland Indians from 72 to 75, then the Texas Rangers from 75 to 77, San Diego Padres from 78 to 79, played with the Texas Rangers again in 1980, New York Yankees in 1980, the Atlanta Braves in 81, the Seattle Mariners in 82 through 83, and then he rounded out his career with Kansas City in 1983. He had a career record of 314 wins and 265 losses, with 3,534 strikeouts and a 3.11 career ERA. He won the Cy Young Award in 1972 and 1978. He received Cy Young votes in 5 seasons and appeared in 5 All-Star games. He was also inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1991. And he was a member of the 1971 San Francisco Giants team that lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates in the National League Championship Series, which is his only postseason appearance. So that's good old Gaylord Perry at number 10 on my Trop 10 baseball players who never won a championship. Then at number 9, I have Mike Piazza. He was the catcher for the most notably the Los Angeles Dodgers and the New York Mets. He played 16 years from 1992 to 2007. He played for the Dodgers from 1992 to 1998. He played with the Marlins in 1998, the New York Mets from 1998 to 2005, the Padres in 2006, and the Oakland A's in 2007. During his career, he had 2,127 hits and 427 home runs with a .308 career batting average. He was Rookie of the Year in 1993. He appeared in 12 All-Star games and received MVP votes in 9 seasons. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016. He also played in 5 postseasons, including the 2000 World Series with the New York Mets, but he never won a ring. Then at number 8 on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, Barry Bonds. He played 22 seasons from 1986 to 2007. He played left field, of course. He played with the Pittsburgh Pirates from 1986 to 1992, and then the San Francisco Giants from 1993 to 2007. He broke numerous records along his career. He had 2,935 career hits, a record 762 home runs, a record 2,558 base on balls, and 1,996 RBI. He batted a .298 for his career and won batting titles in 2002 and 2004. He was a 7-time MVP. He received votes in 8 other seasons for MVP. He was also an 14-time All-Star and won 8 Gold Gloves in his career. And that's actually something I've always discussed with Barry Bonds, is that not only was he one of the best hitters of all time, but really out in left field, he was a great player in left field. And that goes to show you right there, 8 Gold Gloves. He also played in 7 postseason games, including the 2002 World Series, in which the Giants lost to the Anaheim Angels. One of the most heartbreaking moments as a Giants fan ever. Luckily, they bounced back a few years later. Well, not a few years, more like 10 years later. To finally win some World Series there. But that was a very heartbreaking year when they lost to the Angels. So I have Barry Bonds at number 7. Then at number 6 on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, Andre Dawson. He had a 21-year career in which he played outfield. He played with the Montreal Expos from 1976 to 1986, then the Chicago Cubs from 1987 to 1992, the Boston Red Sox from 93 to 94, and then finished his career with the Florida Marlins from 1995 to 1996. He played in a total of 2,627 games with 2,774 hits and 438 home runs with a .279 batting average. He won Rookie of the Year in 1977. He finished in the top 25 in MVP voting 9 times. He won the MVP in 1987 and appeared in 8 All-Star games. He was elected to the Hall of Fame in 2010. He reached the postseason, though, only twice, in 1981 and 1989. In the 81 season, he was with the Expos and advanced to the National League Championship Series, but lost to the Dodgers. And then in 1989, he was with the Cubs and lost the National League Division Series to the San Francisco Giants. Then at number 5 on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, my boy, Ken Griffey Jr., played 22 seasons in the major leagues from 1989 to 2010. He played center field for the Seattle Mariners from 1989 to 1999, the Cincinnati Reds from 2000 to 2008, the Chicago White Sox in 2008, and then rounded out his career with the Seattle Mariners from 2009 to 2010. He had 2,781 hits, 630 home runs, and a career batting average of .284. He finished 3rd in Rookie of the Year voting in 1989 and won the MVP award in 1997. He received MVP votes in 9 other seasons and appeared in 13 All-Star games. He also won 10 Gold Gloves throughout his stellar career. So also not just a hitter, an amazing fielder as well. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2016. He played in 3 postseasons, but never advanced further than the American League Championship Series. Then at number 4 on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, Juan Marichal. He was the pitcher. He pitched 16 major league seasons from 1960 to 1975. He played with the San Francisco Giants from 1960 to 1973, the Boston Red Sox in 1974, and unfortunately the Los Angeles Dodgers in 1975. He had a record of 243 wins and 142 losses with a .289 ERA and 2,303 strikeouts for his career. He received MVP votes in 7 seasons, finished 8th in Cy Young voting in 1971, and appeared in 9 All-Star games. He was elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1983. He pitched in the World Series for the San Francisco Giants in 1962, losing to the New York Yankees. And then he also pitched in the National League Championship Series in 1971, but lost to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Then at number 3 on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, I have Carl Yastrzemski. He played his entire career with the Boston Red Sox from 1961 to 1983. He played left field and first base. He played all 23 seasons with the Red Sox, like I said. He had 3,419 hits, 452 home runs, and maintained a .285 batting average. He won the MVP in 1967 and received MVP votes in 13 other seasons, and he won 7 Gold Glove Awards. He's an 18-time All-Star Game elected, and then he was also inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1989. And he appeared in the postseason twice, including the 1975 World Series. But he played during the reign of the Curse of the Bambino and never won a championship with the Red Sox. So he endured that entire time with the Red Sox, you know, because they used to, like I said, the Curse of the Bambino is basically, you know, they traded, Babe Ruth to the Yankees, and basically they never won another championship up until, God, I can't remember whenever the Red Sox won their championship. Was that like in 2002, 2003? Actually, no, it might have been 05. It was around that time. Regardless, he was obviously had a stellar career, but he played for the Red Sox his entire career and never even really got to win a championship. And he did go to the World Series, but lost in heartbreak fashion, by the way. All right, and then at number three on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, I have Ernie Banks. He played 19 seasons in the major leagues from 1953 to 1971. He also played in the Negro League as well in 1950 and 1953. He played shortstop and first base for the Chicago Cubs from 1953 to 1971. So he also, like Yastrzemski, he was a Cub his entire life and played for the same team the entire way through, and unfortunately never won a championship. And it's funny that I put the two of them back to back. I didn't even realize one was a Red Sox and then the other is a Cub, because the Cubs are also that team that took a million years to, what was it, like 100? It was 100 plus years. I think it ended up being like 101, 102 years until they won their next championship, like 10 years ago now? Nah, it may not be 10, maybe more like 8 years. Regardless, they finally won a championship. But Ernie Banks, he was a ride-or-die Cub his entire career. He recorded 2,583 hits with 512 home runs and 1,636 RBIs and batted a career .274. He won back-to-back MVP awards in 1958 and 1959. He received MVP votes in 11 other total seasons while also appearing in 11 All-Star games. And he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1977. But not only did he never get the opportunity to win a World Series, but he never even played in the postseason his entire career from 1953 to 1971, not even getting the opportunity. So that's pretty crazy in my opinion. All right, and then at number two on my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, Willie McCovey. He played 22 seasons from 1959 to 1980. He was a first baseman, most notably for the San Francisco Giants from 1959 to 1973, then the San Diego Padres from 1974 to 1976, then the Oakland A's in 1976, and then rounded out his career with the Giants from 1977 to 1980. During his career, he collected 2,211 hits, 521 home runs, and 1,555 RBI with a career batting average of .270. He won the Rookie of the Year in 1959 and the MVP in 1969. He received MVP votes in 10 seasons while appearing in 6 All-Star games, and he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1986. He participated in 2 postseasons with the Giants. He lost the World Series in 1962, and then with the Giants in 1971, they lost the National League Championship Series. And then finally, rounding out my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship, number one, Ty Cobb. He played 24 years in the major leagues from 1905 to 1928. He played with the Detroit Tigers center field with the Tigers from 1905 to 1926, and then the Philadelphia A's from 1927 to 1928. He is literally one of the most decorated baseball players of all time. He's actually like the first superstar baseball player of all time, and he never won shit, which is crazy because he is just an amazing baseball player. He had 4,189 career hits with a 366 career batting average. Yeah, 366 career batting average. He was the league MVP in 1911. First of four consecutive seasons, he received votes for the award. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1936. If I recall, he was actually one of the first players ever inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He played in three straight World Series from 1907 to 1909, but unfortunately was unable to get a championship in any one of those three appearances. So that is my top 10 baseball players who never won a championship. I think those are all great, stellar players, and unfortunately, they never got the opportunity to win one. But that's the way that's the way shit goes. You know, sometimes you don't win. But they all had amazing careers, and the majority of them are Hall of Famers. And if they're not in the Hall of Fame, kind of like Barry Bonds, who's not in the Hall of Fame, it's absolute bullshit. Because Mike Piazza, there was also questions around him using steroids, and he's inducted into the Hall of Fame. So just pointing that shit out. But I won't go on a rant on the Baseball Hall of Fame. We all know how I feel about the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I think they will give me plenty of opportunities over the years to rant on how stupid they are with their voting process. But I digress. All right, guys, so that's today's episode. Enjoy the weekend of baseball, because we got a shit ton of baseball on tap. That's pretty much all we got going on for the next probably 3 weeks until training camp gets going with football. But the NBA free agency is also crazy, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Kevin Durant. So enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you all on Monday. Peace out, fools.